discussion keeps the world turning.
This is Round Table.
You're listening to Round Table with myself, He Young. I'm joined by Ding Hung and Li Yi in the studio. And I just feel like making extra noises, the size and everything, just to prove that it's the real He Young here. No AI, no robot, no nothing. It's the real deal. It's the human being here, and there's the one and only, okay? Coming up, have you ever noticed, well, recently noticed, an uptick in shared bike prices? Let's roll through the reasons behind the price surge and discuss how it's impacting cyclists. Is the rise in prices putting a dent in your cycling plans? And all aboard the debate train. Join us as we explore the fine line between privacy and courtesy in using the lower berth in a sleeper train. Where do the user rights for the lower berth in a sleeper train cabin begin and end? Our podcast listeners can find us at Roundtable China on Apple Podcasts, Xiaoyuzhou, Spotify, and all major international platforms. If you have a question you'd like us to answer in a future show, whether it's about something that happened in the news or something you've been wondering about, you could email us a voice memo to ezfmroundtable@foxmail.com. And I know some of you are a little bit shy in sharing your raw voice and emotion, and therefore it's perfectly fine to email us. We'll take that. ezfmroundtable@foxmail.com is where you do it. Now on Roundtable, as we move on to our next topic of discussion. Saddle up for an in-depth look at the rising prices of shared bikes, a trend impacting daily cyclists who depend on these services for their last-mile commute, sustainable travel, and essential transportation needs. With some providers implementing price hikes during holidays, questions arise about the balance between accessibility and affordability. What factors are driving these changes, and how do they impact your city commute? So recently, I guess we need to investigate how big of a price hike it is for shared bikes.
Yeah, recently we do see some complaints coming from the shared bike users saying that the pricing policy or the fluctuating pricing system is quite different and much higher than that in holidays than in normal days. I mean, the current city bike service prices are a starting price of 1.8 yuan, that's about 24 cents for 15 minutes during holidays, with an additional charge of 1 yuan per 15 minutes, and starting price of 1.5 yuan, including 15 minutes during other times, with the same additional charge. So based on this whole pricing system, the cost of riding a shared bike during holidays has increased by over 20%, requiring nearly 5 yuan per hour, which is more expensive than the 1 or 2 yuan fares of most public buses in most cities. And particularly the thing is that since its inception in 2016, shared bikes have really seen a steady rise in prices, starting from the initial rate of 0.5 yuan per 30 minutes, which was much cheaper than the bus ticket, to the current 2.8 yuan per 30 minutes. Prices have increased by about 5 times. So that's why there are some complaints and heated discussion about why we're seeing this rise in shared bike prices and whether it's justifiable.
Mm. Yeah, I think one thing pretty interesting to notify here is that if you drive on a shared bicycle for like 1 hour, it will end up charging you 4.8 yuan in the end. Mm-hmm. That's even higher than the cost of half a liter of gasoline. And if you are a regular car driver, with half a liter of gasoline, you can basically drive your vehicles much farther than riding a shared bike for 1 hour.
Right.
So that's for sure. So you can do the math here. So I think the official response from those platforms like Meituan and Hello Bike is that the labor and operational costs will mm-hmm. generally rise during holidays, so they have to charge more. But I think really the underlying issue here is really this operational costs overall, because shared bike companies, they require significant amount of initial capital investment, mm-hmm. as well as continuous funding and manpower for operational maintenance. According to available data, the daily operational cost of a single unit of shared bike is an estimated 2 yuan. So a bike needs to operate for at least 100 days to break even. So if a platform operates 100,000 bikes, the annual operational costs it has to undertake is about 53 million yuan. That's pretty high for them. According to the latest data, the available volume of Hello Bike, Meituan, and Qingju Bike, which by the way is a business affiliated with Didi Chuxing, namely these are the three leading shared platforms here in China. The available volume of their bikes is 10 million, 5 million, and 6 million on roads. So the annual operational costs for them would range from 2 to 6 billion yuan. That's pretty high.
That is pretty high. And bear in mind, despite that, if you live in China, then you must have come across these bikes. You probably use them every day or whatnot. And you think that they must be, because they are popular service platforms, but none of them are turning a profit from their core business of shared bikes. Just keep that in mind. Maybe assist something about the business model of a lot of these online platforms, which have attracted a lot of daily, if not monthly, users. So this is a really fascinating aspect of the, well, this is not really e-commerce per se, but this online economy these days. And also just sort of circle back one small thing, or, you know, in a small way, I suppose. That is, you guys mentioned all these numbers and both made these really vivid comparisons with, you know, riding a bus, as also operating a car, driving a gas-guzzling car, and, you know, just numbers-wise, these shared bikes look rather expensive or more expensive than one might have thought. But don't you think it's just for the fact that maybe consumers are less sensitive to price increases for lower-cost items and goods? Because, you know, think, you know, where you're supposedly only spending a few yuan on a bike ride or whatnot, and then compared to higher pricing goods, such as maybe people would be a little bit more aware when they're at the gas pump, for example, when they're getting gas for their traditional gas combustion vehicles. So I think it's also useful for us to sort of highlight the fact that, yeah, look at the numbers. These shared bikes are not as cheap as one might perceive, but it also kind of depends on the size of your wallet.
Yeah, because
or if you're using it every day. Or yeah. Maybe if you have the membership card, because if you have the membership card, I suppose it'd be a little bit cheaper in riding these shared bikes. Yes, Ding Ho, you have something to say here.
Well, you know, one observation is that they serve as a very good supplement to a city's public transportation network, right?
Yeah.
Because these shared bikes is really supposed to solve this particular needs of, you know, solving the last mile for a commuter, right?
It's really good you brought this up, because I have another sort of small quibble here. That is, these shared bike companies are saying, oh, during the holidays, our operational costs sort of experienced a jump, that kind of thing. Okay, I have not studied their numbers, nor is their books open to the public to scrutinize. But during the weekday, during the work days, like people are on these bikes to go to work and come back and all those things. And I'm not completely convinced that during holidays, these bikes would enjoy a massive surge in usage. It's just a very different clientele, I would think, because from Monday to Friday, a lot of people are using these bikes to go to places, maybe work-wise. And during the holidays, a lot of these people are at home. They're not going anywhere or whatnot. So it's, you know, that now you're maybe talking about tourists, maybe you're talking about folks who are, you know, doing weekend stuff, maybe on the bikes or whatnot. I'm just kind of fascinated by a more detailed sort of like user behavior analysis, which is not really open to us to review.
I think the major reason that consumers are really complaining about this price rise coming from the shared bikes is that they tend to compare this pricing system of shared bikes with that of buses. And the thing is that buses, they are really part of the public transportation facilities, which are funded, supported, and operated by local governments to a large extent. So, of course, we also discuss about those local bus operators. They're really struggling with their financial situation because of their very cheap prices, and sometimes they can't really be self-sufficient solely on their or without public fund. But the thing is that shared bikes, they are purely or mostly operated by commercial companies, which means that this is basically a commercial business. So I think it just makes sense that those companies are trying to increase or try to adopt this fluctuating pricing system because they just want to make sure they can gain their profits even if during holidays. And another thing is that here in China, I think a few years ago, in 2016 or 2017, where shared bikes were particularly popular at the first place, those major operators, shared bike operators, they're fighting really hard, in a very competitive competition to sustain and win consumers by, say, having this price war. They try to, attract consumers with really, really low prices.
Lots of subsidies.
Yes. And also, they try to cover as many regions as possible across the whole country to, expand their business. But now, in 2024, we do see a quite, mature system or a more concentrated market coming from the shared bikes business that those companies, they're not really, focusing on expanding their business, but also they're trying to increase their profits with each order coming from those ride on a daily basis. So that's why I think it's accelerating this so-called fluctuating or price rise in shared bikes.
Another example of dynamic pricing. And yes, commercial businesses need to make money, but through increasing the price, which of course the consumers and users will feel immediately. Is that the best way to go? Because you're bound to get these discussions once it happens. Yeah.
So my take is that the usage rate for all those bicycles on roads is very important measure for these companies to evaluate the situation in terms of their financial numbers. Because if we're talking about, for example, 100 units on roads, if on an average normal workday, their usage rates could hit, say, 80% or 90%. That's pretty high. But if, like you mentioned earlier, He Yang, during public holiday, less people are using it, like only 20 people are using it, that means they will need to undertake higher operational costs while at the same time their revenue is being reduced, right? So I guess this is an issue that these platforms or corporations are trying to resolve, because the overall trend we have seen in most recent years is that the number of bicycles is decreasing, but the number of users is actually increasing year by year. In the case of here in Beijing, for example, from 2019 to October last year, the number of shared bicycles in the city decreased from 1.9 million to a little more than 1 million. On the other hand, the average daily ridership of shared bikes here in the city was only 1.6 million back in 2019. But by the time of last year, this number had increased to 2.9 million. Mm-hmm. So I guess from a cost effectiveness perspective, this trend is actually good for those platforms. That's why, like we Some of us mentioned earlier, the scale of the annual loss of, say, Hello Bike, I checked its annual losses year by year is actually narrowing in most recent years. But on the other hand, because they have already accumulated so much previous losses, previous years, because there is still some way to go before they can achieve overall profitability, the financial burden on them remains to be very high.
Yes, indeed. And we're seeing that after all these years, as you guys have kind of took us on a journey to look back till the present, now it's pretty much ingrained in the daily habits of a lot of city dwellers in Beijing, Shanghai, and among the 400 cities at or above the county level nationwide. There are these shared bike programs in operation, and approximately 15 million effective bikes are in operation, and a total registered user base of close to 1.3 billion. That is
the population of China is only 1.4 billion, right?
And that's a number that I find to be excuse me, but sure, what we get is that now you are seeing that there is a huge habitual consumption consumer group. And then, therefore, although there are all these problems with the price hike and, consumers going online and share their frustration to some extent, but what do you think? Does the future hold for shared bikes? If you have so many people who are already using this regularly, and some are occasional users, then I guess the companies can afford to raise the price a little bit, because if it's part of your lifestyle, then it's difficult to wean off it, I suppose.
I'm quite positive about the future of this, shared bikes, well, either like shared scooters, shared e-bikes, which are actually developing in smaller cities here in China and also in countries like US and Japan, because I think people still need this kind of convenience and also affordability. And when I do research, I find this concept very interesting in the transportation sector called micro-mobility. It really refers to fully or partially human-powered vehicles typically designed for short-distance travel within urban areas, which includes, say, bicycles, electric scooters, skateboards, or similar devices. And the thing is that we just need this kind of micro-mobility. First of all, as Ding Hong has mentioned, it really helps people to solve like last mile problem. It really offers this different alternative options besides buses for public residents, especially in urban areas. And especially when we talk about buses operators, they are really struggling financially. I think shared bikes can somehow try to solve the anxiety coming from the consumer side, which who might be worrying if their cities are running without buses, but still they can have this alternative services coming from the shared bikes. And more importantly, I think compared with car riding or car hailing, still say riding bikes or say renting a shared bikes or renting an e-bike is comparatively more affordable and cheaper for most people, because that could just offer them another tool of transportation, say to bus stops or subway stations, which I think are pretty important for the overall well-being of community residents. So that's why I think we do have a very, very promising market for the shared bikes. But of course, if we talk about, say, for the benefits of the majority of citizens, then we might just need more support coming from the public transportation sector or from the local governments.
Well, it is interesting. You know, China used to be referred to as the kingdom or the nation of bicycles in the 1980s and before that. Now, thanks to shared bike programs, I guess we continue to hold that title to some extent, although, you know, for a lot of Chinese families, you know, getting a car, whether the traditional gasoline powered ones or EVs, that's one thing that a lot of families have adopted or are aspiring to do so. But you see, at the same time, in especially cities, well, shared bikes is a huge part of the public transportation system. And by the look of it, it will continue to be so. But for the user experience to be enhanced to some extent, I think these companies still could do more. But I also can feel the frustration and the qualm to some extent, especially if you are a publicly listed company, and then your quarterly pressure of showing performance in the numbers could be a double-edged sword, in the sense that you need to think about growth. But on the other hand, how are your users going to respond to that? Question mark. Coming up, choo-choo, choose your side. A recent sleeper train spat over the use of the lower berth has got us thinking. How can we balance privacy and politeness in shared travel spaces? What's your take on this trackside tussle? Stay tuned.
Looking for passion? How about fiery debate? Want to hear about current events in China from different perspectives? Then tune in to Roundtable, where East meets West and understanding is the goal.
It's the hour of Roundtable with myself, He Young. I'm joined by Li Yi and Ding Heng in the studio. The recent incident aboard a sleeper train where an elderly passenger confronted young travelers for hanging a curtain on their lower berth has sparked a broader discussion about the delicate balance between personal privacy and communal courtesy in shared travel spaces. This dispute underscores the need to clarify the evolving social dynamics and expectations within the confined environment of a train compartment. Why is this such a source of brouhaha online?
I think the background here is that in a traditional second class rail car here in China, like a normal room really consists of six hard berth with two in the upper, middle, and lower positions, and respectively. And the thing is that the price for the lower berth was usually more expensive, slightly more expensive than those in the upper or middle sections. But of course, these seats are usually more sought after, especially for elderly passengers. It's really hard for you to book a ticket of the lower berth. So if you really buy the tickets of the upper or middle berth, then you have to climb on a ladder every day, which can be quite difficult for some people. And more importantly, the space on the upper and the middle sections is usually more limited. So that's why usually we can accept that, you know, people in the upper or middle berth, they tend to sit on the lower berth during daytime, as long as it does not really interfere with the lower berth users. But the thing is that it's just an unspoken rule, not really a regulation or something that people have to go by or have to obey. Mm-hmm. But now simply we're seeing, you know, those some younger train passengers, they are not really willing to accept that social norm. They are simply saying no to that norm. And more importantly, we do see a response coming from the official railway transportation department. They're also saying that it's the right of the user of the lower berth, which or not to share the space with other passengers.
So I guess reading all those comments, because there is an online opinion poll about this matter. Mm-hmm. So I guess the official the responses from netizens is really one-sided. They are very supportive to this young passengers. And I think this elderly lady is really taking issue with this behavior on the part of the younger generation, for example, over hanging a curtain on the lower berth. Mm-hmm. I guess the official policy of China Railway or the railway regulator of this country is that there is no explicit rule prohibiting the use of curtain, right?
Yeah.
I guess for young people, they desire a certain degree of privacy, etc., etc. So I guess as long as they do not really affect other passengers, for example, as long as they do not really block the aisle of this compartment, it's okay. And yeah, the fact of the matter is that you pay your money, which is higher, for your own position, for your own space. So you really have the legitimate right to make reasonable use of that very space that belonging to you.
Yeah, and one might wonder, what's up with the curtain? Well, actually in China, especially maybe in college dorms, it's not unusual for the students to set up a curtain, almost like a tent, on their bed. So to create a little bit of privacy, I think that's where it comes from. Yeah, maybe this shows that in the past, supposedly the social norm of people sharing the lower berth with other people, that is the great courtesy. And maybe that's what we should acknowledge. And it's completely up to the person who's purchased the tickets, who've obtained the consumer's rights to the use of that space. And I think that is something most people have agreed upon these days. And that survey Ding Heng mentioned had more than 150,000 people attend the survey, and 80% of them say, yeah, those people could use the lower berth to themselves because they paid for it. And we will see you next time on Roundtable.